This is Jay. I'm a science and statistics educator from Oregon. Welcome to one of my favorite podcasts, School of Practice, on Edutopia Radio.
When I was a newer teacher, I didn't know anything about brain science. I was teaching this amazing lesson on similes, and it was on fire, and the kids were giving examples, and I was like, I crushed this.
That's Kathleen Beachboard. She's a high school English teacher, author, and researcher in Virginia.
They came in the next day, and I'm so excited to just jump onto the next thing, but I thought, you know what? I'm just gonna randomly ask them a couple of questions about yesterday. And I got blank stares, and I was like, what? Are you serious? Because I didn't do what I know now, they weren't able to encode it and put it into their memory long term. Teachers need to learn about how our brains work, because the more you understand how the brain works, the better that you can teach the brains that are in the room.
This is School of Practice, where we share what works inside real classrooms. I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school ELA teacher. Today, we're talking about memory, retention, and how to flatten what's known as the forgetting curve. In the 1880s, German psychologist Hermann Ebbinghaus pioneered research that showed our brains can forget new information at an alarming rate. He found that half of new information, if not used right away, can be forgotten within an hour. And if you wait a week, up to 90% can be lost. That is the forgetting curve. But research also shows that the curve doesn't need to look like that. Learning strategies rooted in recall, reflection, and application can make memory much more durable and flatten the curve. These are exactly the kinds of things that Kathleen Beachboard spends her time thinking about. She's nearly two decades into her teaching career, and she has learned so much more about brain science since her early days of lessons on similes. Today, Kathleen's going to share three of her favorite strategies to help students remember new information and counter the natural process of forgetting. Okay, let's dive in. Kathleen, welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to be talking with you again.
Yay, I'm so excited to be back, Kristen.
Can you tell us what is the forgetting curve and how would you define it?
Trying to remember trivial facts and information is not the brain's main function. And so the forgetting curve is our students just forgetting the information that their brain deems as not important to them as a person.
Right. So over time, our brains have been wired to prioritize survival over trivia. So what does it mean to flatten the forgetting curve to you, Kathleen?
To flatten the forgetting curve is to essentially use what we know about the science of memory to be proactive to help kids to remember. We want our content and our information to stick, and we're fighting the brain's natural tendency. So if we're not cognizant of this constantly and adapting our lessons and how we teach to make sure that information is put into long-term memory, we're fighting a losing battle.
Kathleen, what are some common misconceptions around memory and retention?
Well, a lot of people assume that if you teach something and you go over it maybe once or twice, that thing will be retained. But the reality is that is not the case with how the memory works. And we have students who cram a bunch of information in, but they don't retain it long term because ultimately their brain says this is useless. As soon as the brain defines a piece of information as something not applicable to the child, they start to forget it. We can't just expect encoding to be there, even if they get a 100 on the test. You test it 2 to 3 months from there, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to get those same results.
Okay, so as you said, you're going over information much more than one or two times. That might feel redundant to some kids. How much do you tell your students about why you're using these strategies?
I tell my students why I'm using these strategies every day, and I'm very clear with them because they need to understand how their brain works, how learning works. You're showing the students that there is no one path to learning information. They can create the path. And that's the other thing as teachers. We can't just say, oh, I'm not going to tell them there's a forgetting curve. It is great to be open and tell students how their brain works so that they can be more effective learners. And so I tell my students, this is an important thing for you to do because it allows you to own your learning.
Let's talk about some of the strategies you use to flatten the forgetting curve in your classroom. The first technique you use is called a brain dump. This is a quick check for understanding where students write down everything they can remember after a lesson. You do it to reinforce immediate recall. So it's right after a lesson.
Yep. I call it tell me what you know. And so it makes it very easy for them to know what I want out of it instead of saying, I want your whole brain on the paper. And it makes it less cognitively intimidating. So I have the kids put everything away and I set a timer. Like, we don't do this forever. I only give them 2 minutes. One of the things that I do the first couple times just to help the kids is I have them literally close their eyes and go back and imagine what they just went through. Okay, I want you to start with the beginning of the lesson. What were the things that stood out to you? What was interesting about it? You can draw pictures. You can write down things I said. It's like a quick snapshot for your brain. It wakes your brain up to say, this was important enough for me to write down. So it's important enough for me to build on later.
Okay, 2 minutes. Pen and paper, they're writing down everything they can remember from the lesson. Kathleen, are there ways that you model this activity for your students?
Yeah, so usually at the beginning of the school year, I'll ask them, what's something that I should really know about? This year, it was sourdough bread making. So I modeled this. I watched an intro video and they saw me do it on sourdough bread making that lasted 4 minutes. Then I went to the board so they could see it really big and I brain dumped everything that was important. And then afterwards I said, now, are there things I missed? And they were like, yeah, you missed this and this and this. But the point is, it wasn't about me being correct. It was about me saying, this is what caught my attention.
Okay, I love this for so many reasons. One, because I'm a bread baker, but also that opportunity for your students to tell the teacher, this is what you missed. I can imagine that they love that.
They did, but it also showed them it's okay to not catch everything on a brain dump.
Okay, so after the brain dump, your students each have a paper where they've written down the key things standing out to them from the lesson, but it's very loosely organized. What is the next step in making this activity coherent and meaningful?
The immediate next step in the brain dump activity is utilizing shoulder partners or people around them to look at the different brain dumps that are happening in the room. I allow kids like a minute to like compare, contrast, and they circle things that they feel like are not on the other sheet. Maybe they had a misconception, or maybe they have some things that are similar and they can actually take notes from the other person. And what that does is it helps them clarify their thinking before I have to look at the brain dumps. And it's a really great formative assessment to see if what I taught was truly clear.
Got it. So, Kathleen, you do these brain dumps followed by discussion and clarification right when kids are about to drop off that first cliff of the forgetting curve, that initial hour where research says that kids can lose 50% of the new material.
Yep.
That seems really smart, but for students to move things to long-term memory, they also need to repeatedly reflect on how new information connects to their lives. You said that as soon as the brain identifies a piece of information as not relevant, poof, it's gone. So your second strategy is a living wall of learning. You use this to help your students make connections, ask questions, and review material over the course of a unit. Tell me what this looks like in your classroom.
So I have this space in my classroom. It's called my living wall. I have one that is a visible physical space that they can interact with. But for teachers that don't have that, They can have a digital living wall. All it has to be is it needs to be a space where you have the key parts of your unit displayed. This is where they can ask questions. They can write down key concepts. They can leave notes, or they could say, hey, this is my aha moment.
Okay, so you've got your unit broken down and displayed on the wall. It's called a living wall because students are constantly adding to it, updating it and reviewing it.
Yeah, we use it constantly throughout what we're learning. Today, we had a whole bunch of stations going on at the same time. And then students, as they were moving, were expected to visit the living wall. And because they're interacting with the questions, the thoughts, the ideas, and they're adding to it, that also helps with encoding because they're not just seeing the information once when they brain dump it, they're seeing it being built in front of them.
Let's use a real example from a recent lesson of yours. What is an example of what would actually be placed on the wall?
So right now, we're currently working on ethos, pathos, and logos, the persuasive appeals. After teaching each one of the appeals, I said, all right, I want you to give an example of where you've seen these.
Okay, so we've got a unit on Aristotle's three pillars of persuasion, the building blocks of rhetoric. I remember this well from my ELA teaching days. So you've got those three pillars on the living wall and kids are adding examples from their lives. A kid might take a post-it note and write, oh, I saw an animal rescue ad and it made me really sad. And they're sticking that post-it under the heading that says pathos for the appeal to emotions. Is that how this is working?
Yeah. So they leave the example right underneath of the concept.
How do you support students who are maybe struggling with making connections on their own?
I usually have small groups of kids go up there together. This is something to help all of us understand what we're doing better. It is not for a grade. And they benefit also from like sentence starters. So it could be something like, this reminds me of, now I understand more about, because they have those sentence stems, it gives them guidance on things that they could put on the wall.
You also have a living wall review session with the whole class on Fridays, right? What is the purpose of that and how does it work?
Well, for the Friday review, I like doing it at least once a week because you're allowing the kids to take time to essentially study. They're thinking about the learning as, okay, if this was a test, what kind of things would be on there? What is important from what we've learned? And they're asking questions, they're reviewing. So the way it works is the questions that were asked over the week, we actually go back through them and they have to defend and answer them. And as we're reviewing, that sometimes the kids are like, oh, here's a new thing I want to put on the living wall. And so we're reviewing older stuff, we're reviewing newer stuff, and they know they're allowed to ask any questions that are up there. And that's the other thing. We don't give time for kids to just be curious.
Zooming way out, Kathleen, how do these living wall activities guard against forgetting?
So the biggest thing that we know with memory is you have to actually use it over and over again. And so with the living wall, it's something built into the class where they can actually take time to reflect, to remember, and to go over the concepts that we've done for an entire unit.
Okay, got it. Your brain dump strategy takes care of those first few minutes of rapid forgetting. And this living wall strategy pushes back against the middle of the curve. We're continuing to reinforce memory and that downward curve is flattening out. Excellent. After the break, we'll talk about how using new learning for a task like drafting an Instagram caption, believe it or not, really solidifies memory. We'll be right back.
Hey there, have you ever thought about writing for Edutopia? If you're ready to share what's working in your classroom or school community, our Write For Us page has everything you need to get started. Your story could be the one that sparks change for another educator. Visit edutopia.org and search Write For Us to get started.
Okay, let's talk about your third strategy to flatten the forgetting curve. Kathleen, this last one is rooted in the idea of applying knowledge. What does that look like in your classroom?
So when we get ready to apply learning, I always tell the kids, it's great that you have the content. Now it's time to utilize it. The goal is to have them apply it to some sort of real-world situation or scenario where kids can see how the content is applicable to their lives and how it can be utilized as a tool.
And why is the application of new knowledge essential to stopping erosion of memory?
Application is essential for stopping the erosion of memory because once we apply something, we can actually have that content linked with other pieces of what we already know as humans. And once you start linking it to things you already know about or already do, you make that memory more powerful.
Right. So it's no longer just an abstraction. Kids learn and struggle with all the nuances by practicing real-world examples. Kathleen, can you give us an example from a recent lesson of yours?
One task that we did recently was argumentative writing. And I had the students think about something that was going on in the world that really mattered to them. And I had them write persuasive letters to the editor, to the local newspaper, so that their voices could be heard on the issues that mattered to them. And then another really good one that the students connected with was learning about idiomatic expressions around the world, like it's raining cats and dogs, and it's not literally raining cats and dogs. It's an expression we developed to say, hey, heavy rain. And we had pen pals in another country. So one of the things they did in one of their letters was to apply using some of the idiomatic expressions that were applicable to the country that we were writing to, which was Australia. And so they tried to use some of the slang and lingo. And it was really interesting how their pen pals responded back once they got that, because you could see that they were more engaged.
Ah, I love this idea of returning to good old pen pals so students can connect their learning outside of the classroom. What are some other prompts that teachers can use to get their students to apply what they're learning?
It could be like, write a 2-sentence story on what we learned and why it's important. Make this thing that we've just learned into a tweet, Instagram. This is where, you know, AI could come in handy for a lot of teachers. You don't have to sit and say, oh, I'm not a creative teacher. You could go on to AI and get ideas like, hey, I want to apply this math concept in a real world way that helps students, and give me 25 ideas.
Okay, Kathleen, we have talked about brain dumps, living walls, and creative application. Give us some pointers about what strategy to use when.
So when you think about your regular class period, immediate recall, doing a brain dump every day. This could be, instead of just doing an exit ticket where you ask them a question, do a brain dump and you can look at them and you can see what learning took place. Then after that, looking at the learning science, you want to at least touch that living wall or go back to those concepts at least every 3 days. That's the minimum. If we expand that, the issue is they're going to start forgetting things.
And what about creative applied mini tasks? How frequently are you doing those?
Ultimately, I'm doing them usually about midway through a unit and usually at the end. And it's something to help synthesize all of the major concepts that we're learning.
Okay, so you've taken us through 3 phases of flattening the forgetting curve. One last question. What would you say is the harm in not using strategies like these to improve retention? What's at stake here?
What's at stake is we're not teaching kids how their brain works. And that's a problem because sometimes kids get frustrated and they're thinking, I just don't get this. I'm just not an English person. I'm just not a math person. And they essentially doom spiral because they see that their learning isn't working. So when they take these steps, they're learning, oh, I can actually adapt and go against this forgetting curve and fight it so that I can remember.
Love that. And Kathleen, I have to say, your enthusiasm for brain science is infectious. So I think you have just convinced us all to learn more about the brain. Kathleen, it's been wonderful talking with you again. I'm so glad you were on the show again.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Kristen.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, a brain dump is a great low-lift way to get your students to start re-engaging with new material right away. As Kathleen says, tell me what you know, but remember to follow the activity with a teacher-led consolidation activity so your students can close gaps in their thinking and clarify muddy areas. Two, to drive home new learning, once or twice isn't enough. Kathleen uses a living wall to make sure students are continuing to recall the material and connect it to prior learning. But you could also use gamified quizzes, debates, or regular mini review periods of 5 to 10 minutes. And three, when it comes to fun, creative applications of learning like summary tweets or drawing a 4 or 8 panel comic strip, you don't have to go it alone. You can always lean on AI for some quick, easy suggestions. Special thanks to Kathleen Beachboard for sharing her tips with us. We'll link to our Edutopia article about these strategies in our episode notes. We'll also post our video about the Barbara Morgan STEM Academy's real-world science curriculum, along with other resources. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions, and let us know what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and a review. This helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Anne Margaret Warner and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.